Hey, landlords, are you ready to level up your rental game and simplify your life? Well, get ready to meet your new best friend, KeyCheck. KeyCheck is your all-in-one solution for stress-free property management with tenant-paid screenings, rent payment processing, online lease creation with eSign, and a suite of incredible landlord tools. You'll wonder how you ever lived without it. No more chasing down checks or sifting through piles of applications. KeyCheck helps you organize and manage all things landlording in a simple and efficient way. So if you're tired of the rental chaos and crave seamless, efficient management, head over to KeyCheck.com and sign up today. Make landlord life a breeze with KeyCheck, the game changer for modern property owners.
Welcome to Landlord Diaries, where we talk about midterm rentals and the opportunities behind them. We'll share landlord stories, talk about maximizing investment potential, and discuss how to live the very best landlord life. This podcast is proudly brought to you by Furnished Finder, the place for everything midterm rentals. Remember to like and subscribe if you enjoy our content.
It's that time again. Welcome back, listeners, and those who watch on YouTube. Thanks for being here with us. It's your host, Kelly Bailey, midterm enthusiast, exclusively on Furnished Finder in the Austin, Texas area and surrounding.
And hey, hey, I'm Katie, everyone. It's so nice to be here. Today, we get to talk with Brad and Jamie Flanagan of the Flipping Flanagans. I feel like there's so many tongue twisters that could lead to. But these guys are like the dream team. They're pretty much like real life Chip and Joanna, but way easier to talk to. And I feel like Brad is like clearly the genius behind the numbers, where he's crunching them all and he's got like mad scientist brain. And then Jamie is like all about the strategy and the marketing and finding the deals and helping investors. It's so perfect. And we get into a lot of data talk. We get into a lot of talk about rates and recession. And we get into talk about really how to maximize those investments. So this is a good one.
I'm going to add in, Katie, if Chip and Joanna, if you're listening, we would totally love to have you on the show
we'll
too.
We'll take you.
And I have used Magnolia Realty to purchase in my Belton Temple area.
Hey, love it. And just as a reminder to everyone, this episode and all episodes are powered by Furnished Finder, your home for midterm rentals. If you're looking for a midterm rental ever, you can find, I think we're at 150,000 properties now, which is crazy. And
150,000? Right. Yeah.
Yeah. And growing every day. And if you have one to list, what's cool is it's $99 to list for a whole year. You can sign as many tenants as you want. And we're never going to take one of those crazy booking fees. There's no 3% added to the end of your bill. So excited.
Hello, everyone. Thanks for joining us for another great episode. We have a fun couple today. On the show, we have Brad and Jamie Flanagan. Brad is a real estate professional focused on finance. Jamie is CEO of Big Picture Real Estate Group, and together they make the Flippin' Flanagans. Their focus is helping entrepreneurs, investors, and real estate professionals elevate their wealth and create financial freedom. You can follow them on their podcast, Financial Freedom with the Flippin' Flanagans, or honestly, if you just Google search their name or Flippin' Flanagans, you're going to come across plenty of links to click on. So Brad, Jamie, thank you so much for being here today. How are y'all?
Good. Thanks for having us.
Yes.
Awesome.
Nice to be here.
Yes. We're so happy to have you. Let's jump into a typical real estate question is, what's your why? And maybe that differed from when you started than where you're at now.
It definitely has changed over the years. I remember me and Brad doing our very first like vision board together, gosh, 13, 14 years ago. And at that time, it was like we had a new baby and just trying, you know, we wanted to support her, wanted to give her a life that we never had. And now that we've grown and we've got the investments, it's really become like educating others to allow them to create what we've created, because we see, like, I get emotional about it, but like, we see how much it's blessed our family and how much of a difference it's impacted us. So really just showing people the other side of what investing can actually do for your family.
And I would say, like, as real estate professionals, we've in the last, well, if you lived through early 2000s, you saw what bad decision making kind of could do for the entire country, for an entire economy or segment of the market. And as a result of learning and becoming very proficient and being real estate experts and then going out and educating people, I think we have a not only an ability, but almost a responsibility to kind of be a leader in that space so that we can further the present and the future population, if you will.
Love it. So tell us a little bit about your team and what services you guys offer, because I know you have, you know, agent, do you help find properties and then you do the financial parts and the marketing? Like tell us all of the parts of the pie, because I feel like there's a lot of slices.
We have a lot of slices, and that's really, honestly, we stay within the real estate realm with everything that we do. But you know, when people talk about diversification, that's like really like where we can diversify, but at the same time have an economy of our own. So it started with, I sold real estate. Brad did the loans. I'd work with a buyer. He would do the financing. And we still do that. So it escalated into, I'd go on a listing appointment. My client would need to sell their house, and we'd go through options of like, they didn't want to move stuff, or I was in new construction. So essentially I'd meet with them, and we were needing to sell their house maybe 6-9 months down the road. And they were worried about, am I going to have a double payment if it doesn't sell in 6 months? And we kind of created this, if I went on a listing appointment, what if we just offered to purchase their home? And we had a couple of rental properties prior to this, but this is really like when it comes to like the full encompass of like the real estate world, we would essentially offer to buy their house. And then it turned into, now we had a solution if somebody needed a rental in between homes, we had the solution for it. We started investing more. We obviously, Brad's a genius when it comes to finance, and so just navigating like what we were doing. If we were going to buy another rental and we already had 4 loans, what does that look like? What's the next step? And so we really started being asked the questions of, do you guys, like, secondary mortgage, market mortgage probably isn't the best fit. Commercial financing might be. And Brad's the person who's going to educate. And no matter what, if he gets paid or not on it, like, I'm going to give you the best solution possible. And I, you know, serve, don't sell. And from there, it really elevated. So I have a real estate team. He still does mortgages. And then we've grown our portfolio. And now we've got Airbnbs. We've got short-term, mid-term, long-term rentals. We've got rentals in multiple states. So we just really wanted, it turned into, we became the solution for no matter what somebody needed for real estate, we were the solution. And now we consult. So if somebody has questions as far as like, what's my next step? Brad will work with look through their entire personal financial statement and figure out, okay, what makes sense and with what assets you have, what's the most best way to move forward.
Yeah. And it's very simplistic in the sense of, if you've seen that, there's a cartoon movie, I can't remember what the heck it's called, but the tagline or this recurring message throughout is see a need, fill a need. And by us just keeping our heads down and staying focused on becoming as proficient as possible in our craft, there's this recurring phone call, text message, email. Do you have a second? Can I pick your brain? Can you take a look at this scenario? And then you start to realize how inefficient it can be if you're just taking time out to like have that one-on-one conversation or share what we feel is very valuable information and for the right reasons. So in every, maybe 1 out of 10, or let's, you know, if you want to go high, maybe 20% of the people who you share that very actionable and tested or experience driven information with doesn't actually go take action. So then we kind of wanted to have an impact on a bigger scale. And as we saw needs, we just figured, what the heck, let's just kind of fill it. And
love that. Okay. I must say, now you've got everyone's interest piqued. You're going to have to do some research and figure out what movie that is. We want to know what movie. It sees a need and solves a need. So all of our kids can watch it. But I'm going to go out on a limb here because I would like to jump into your portfolio. I should have done better note-taking when I listened to your podcast. But I think if I remember correctly, and please do correct me if I'm wrong, y'all have around $50 million dollars worth of property value between all of your properties. Am I remembering that right from your podcast?
So we've owned, I think we've owned $50 million worth of real estate from flips transactions.
That's what
we,
it was.
Our portfolio right now is closer
somewhere
to like 14.
20, 30.
What? Okay. Really? Oh.
Yeah. Awesome. I just like to establish those numbers so guests kind of get an idea of who they're listening to. And so why don't y'all give us a quick overview of your current portfolio and why you added midterm rentals to that part of your strategy.
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Today's episode is proudly sponsored by Furnished Finder, the ultimate platform for hassle-free midterm rentals. Whether you're a seasoned landlord or just getting started, Furnished Finder is the place for you. With Furnished Finder, you can say goodbye to booking fees and hello to direct bookings for 30-day plus days. It's a win-win for everyone involved. So if you're ready to experience the joys of midterm renting and take a load off your landlord's shoulders, head over to furnishedfinder.com today. We make it easy to get started. We're grateful to Furnished Finder for sponsoring this episode, and we're sure you'll love what they have in store for you.
So I'll start with like just kind of the portfolio itself and like building it, because again, coming from extremely humble beginnings, even like single parent households and things like that. So it was kind of funny. My grandparents had a lake house and a duplex in addition to their primary residence, and that was like the extent of it. And then they rented the duplex to family, and I kind of got to see maybe even what not to do. Like, they did do things right, but then you see and kind of retain what not to do. But for whatever reason, it just kind of stuck in the back of the mind. Like, real estate's very cool. There's something about being a real estate investor. We had the opportunity to kind of buy and then not have to sell when it came to the first real rental acquisition. It was more like it was already a home. It just converted to a rental. And the easiest way for us and the most familiar market was single family. So grew that to about 10. And then there was this.
Invest in what you know, right? Like, we were very involved in residential real estate. I was selling residential real estate. Those were the deals that were falling in my lap. I knew what to do to update them. Like, I had the contractor. We had the contractors, but the relationships were there to accomplish the goal. Mm-hmm.
And then we figured out how to manage, because as you grow, you feel the pains and the growing pains and decide, do we continue to scale this? So then we were able to start venturing into multifamily kind of on the smaller level. Our market is, or where we started, was somewhat common to have these single family conversions. So duplexes and potentially triplexes, things like that. Get into a 10-plex, and then you start renovating and just sort of spiraled into how do we make sure this is diverse. In the beginning, it was not cash flow driven because we were okay with the day-to-day ordinary income. Now we were buy cash flow. Like, if you can find an investment that has inherent value or, you know, sweat equity, then as you grow, you might need to actually increase the bottom line of the P&L. So now you can very targeted search or plan for that next deal. And I remember still where we went when we sat down and we increased our budget for our own family home. And that was like this critical moment where it was like, there is true strategy to be executed when you know what it is that you need. So it's more about asking those questions. I always refer to Tony Robbins and how he has, you know, he asks you your why, like you asked us, but he asks you seven darn times to get down deeper. And that was what we challenged ourselves to do just financially and say, what is it that we really need and how can we really accomplish it? So we revised that maybe two or three times until it was more than we thought it would be, I think, when it came to like
renovations.
We did 1031, yeah. We used cash to purchase, then used cash to renovate. And it was a long time horizon before you saw the fruits of that labor. But then that's what put us again into another position to grow again. And so that's how we started into the multifamily. Ultimately, then we got into commercial, very little. So we have commercial office space, commercial, residential, multifamily, and then single family.
And actually, so on that note, to tie this back to what you asked, so one of the commercial properties ended up being a lot more expensive than we anticipated. Our contractor quoted us one price. It went through the roof. And actually, it was like, well, Airbnb, our short-term rentals, they cash flow, but they're a lot of freaking work. And if I have to answer questions all night, like, this isn't an option. However, I love the midterm. Like, let's see if we can fix this. We didn't know if the demand would be there in Omaha, to be completely honest. And we took six units and we converted them completely to Furnished Finder rental units. And so now we have six units there for, I think there are four one bedrooms and two bedrooms, but it's a four of each, or four and two. But we basically started, we were like, we have this huge contractor bill. And the only way that we're going to be able to make this property make sense is if we can get short-term rental money with less work. Cause we weren't able to have the manpower to like have night to night rentals and manage six additional ones. And we do have help, and it just, we evaluated it. And like, again, it was a big strategy move of like, what's next. And Furnished Finder has been an absolute amazing thing for us. So we have 100% since we've bought that building and it's been ready to rent. We've had all six units rented to travel nurses or somebody who found us on Furnished Finder.
Yeah. So what are some of the other travelers you're seeing besides traveling medical professionals in your area?
That's mostly what we see. I did post Furnished Finder in Arizona, and I noticed like there's a lot more diversity in the people that are finding us on Furnished Finder in Arizona versus in Omaha. It really is specifically medical.
Which is great.
Have a property manager, and she does most of the communicating with our leads. So I could be wrong, but from the few talks I've had with her just about who's moving in, it's always medical. But in some of the bigger markets, I think more people know about Furnished Finder. And so even people between housing or corporate relocations are utilizing the platform.
Mm-hmm. So you mentioned Omaha and Arizona. Where else do you guys own properties? Do you like to go in different markets, or have you found kind of a couple markets and then you're really diving into those?
Yeah, Omaha is where the majority of our portfolio is. We have a couple of properties in Colorado. We have just one property in Arizona, and that was actually initially purchased as more of a primary residence. And we found that we love Colorado, and so we literally just rehomed here. And so now Colorado is our primary residence, and we have somebody renting out our Arizona house for a few months until we decide if we're going to sell it. The depreciation on that house will be phenomenal. So those are strategic conversations
with the interest rates and, you know, big buzz and conversations around that. And at the end of the day, we can continue to save via debt servicing costs. That's great. And the only thing I did want to touch on before we got too far back on it was how much the Furnished Finder model impacted actually that property value. So we're, of course, getting a premium in rent because we do have a percentage of overhead that is more significant than if it was a long-term rental. And when you do a valuation on a commercial multifamily property or any real investment property, the income has an impact on what that overall value is. So after renovating it, we probably would have seen quite a significant increase in the value based upon our cost basis on it. But then being able, and to my surprise, after providing the rent roll and the income statement to the appraiser, we got that report back. And it was like, kind of like, almost
it was like a wall.
So because the rents were so much more than even that area, it really just gave us now additional leverage to go out and duplicate that process if we wanted to.
Now, like for investors listening, it's like you're building your resume. So anytime that you can take an opportunity and you can show that you increase the value, you increase the rent, and you like really were able to, like your personal input into this created more money, more cash flow, more value. You know, the banks want to give you more money. It's like you're building your resume with them.
Right.
And when she says property manager, it's an in-house payroll employee that we have. We don't outsource the property management. So keeps us closer to finger on the pulse and ear to the ground as far as what's going on and how to tackle any challenges or how to record any successes.
That's great. What an impressive thing too, to take a commercial property and transition it into multifamily, because that's no joke. Those properties are set up so differently. They're set up so differently that's quite impressive.
Thank you.
Kelly, I see here that you would like to do a mock consultation.
Yes, I was going to do one more thing before that, though. So we're going to do that next. So your podcast is about financial freedom, and I'm sure many of our listeners will find great value in your show as well. So I want to really dive into giving y'all the floor to give listeners a quick taste of what's important in your world for financial freedom. So what's the top three steps to financial freedom for our furnished finder landlords that you would recommend?
Really, I would say on his side of things, like really understanding what you have in front of you as far as like building your personal financial statement, your assets. A lot of people don't realize like what they actually have. And one of our first investments, we used his truck as a down payment on one of the properties, and just getting creative and really looking at that.
What resources, first thing that we do is a financial consultation to determine and organize what resources we currently have. And then that helps identify what the need is. Now we just need to get the roadmap on who's going to fulfill that need again. And it's robots.
And the next thing I would say is understanding where your strengths lie and understand your weaknesses. So when him and I do some coaching together, I have a spreadsheet or like a chart, and it's like, here's all the things that you have to do as part of the role of landlord. And if it's like a spouse, like most of the people we work with are husband and wife, or, you know, or have a business partner where you can offset, like, what are you good at? What am I good at? Where and staying in your lane. So the next thing would be really figuring out all the tasks that are involved and who's going to do what. We used to, fight over it.
A mortgage guy doing floors or fixing toilets is not the highest and best use of time.
Yes.
But you know, it's also like really good to remember, because I think a lot of people, when they're getting started, feel like they have to do everything and they have to know everything. And my husband and I have had to be very intentional with just knowing what our strengths and weaknesses are too. Like, he's crazy detail oriented to the point where it annoys me. And I'm like, okay, so you go do that and I'll be back, you know? Yeah. And it's, you have to know your strengths and weaknesses. And you also have to know, like you said, like what's the highest and best use of your time, and at different levels of your investment journey, what can you afford to outsource? right? You might be laying the floors at first, but at what point can you flip that switch and say, okay, I'm better off doing X, Y, and Z and getting someone else in here to do these floors. Like, we're at that point.
Mm-hmm. Yep, exactly. Oh, yeah. Well, and I've had investors that I've consulted with and they're doing the work themselves where it's like, it took 6 months. And when you evaluate how long that took versus the loss in rent, I'm like, it actually cost you more. You weren't willing to write the check. And then when you start to really realize that, it's like, yeah, I'd rather get in and out and get rent rolling in faster. It's impactful.
I call it lost opportunity cost. And so even in the world where I was consulting with people in the low interest rate environment, and they're telling me they want to put $250,000 on this new purchase of $350. So they had a $100,000 loan. They considered that safe, but you're losing the ability to put that money to work where you could earn, let's say, 7% conservatively, and you were doing it to save 3%. So you lost a net 3% and 4%.
Right. Yeah. It's interesting once you start thinking like that, right? And I think it's somewhat generational too. You know, when I grew up, it was like second mortgage or home equity line of credit was almost like you were saying a four-letter word. Like, it was awful. It was awful. And now I'm like, those things are tools. They're tools, right? That we can use, like you said, to make your money work for you. So, but I will say, I think it's really important that every investor finds someone like yourself that knows the ins and outs and knows what they're talking about and all of the different options, because it can get complicated really quickly. And you want to make sure that you're, you know, staying on the straight and narrow there.
Yeah.
And no one size fits all, unfortunately.
Right. And there's a lot more options than a lot of people are aware of, right? There's a lot of options.
There are.
I feel like I get to be in a special place being the host, because I get an intro call and the actual episode. And it's always intriguing to me how answers change on the intro versus the episode. So I got the best of both worlds with your answer today. But I want to add in some that you mentioned on our intro call as well. So now you get 6 tips rather than 3. And if y'all want to add anything about these, then definitely do so at the end. One was analyzing your overall budget is super important, and being ready to commit to at least 3 years to make it worthwhile is one thing that y'all had said. 2, implementation and leasing, and that's the side that Jamie normally jumps into. And then 3, calculating the numbers, like acquisition to market value. How is the property you're adding affecting your value? So I really enjoyed those answers as well.
Okay, so the only thing I would add into that is just, I know you mentioned like leasing and marketing, but marketing the property is probably where I see the quickest way to add money to your current investments. Because usually we'll have a call with somebody and they're like, I have 2 rentals and I'm having a hard time renting them or whatever it might be. And I can literally do a quick Google search, find their property, and like just from, if you compare it to other properties, like pictures. If you have brighter pictures and you hire a professional photographer, and that comes from me being a real estate agent. So, you know, but as a landlord, spending that $100 to get the professional pictures done, or some people's markets are more, but let's say $250, it's well worth it. And you get those pictures forever. You can use them every turnover. So like when that property looks prime and you just had it finished and you just had it staged and furnished and you're putting it on Furnished Finder, you need nice pictures for Furnished Finder. So you might as well have them for yourself. Mm-hmm. So definitely.
If you could just tell everyone that. So it makes such a difference.
I kind of like it that ours stands out though.
Right? So I love what you're saying there. And I think we don't talk about this enough, because we just recently went to the Bigger Pockets conference, and there was a session on midterm rentals. And there's a book coming out called 30 Day Stay that highlights how to navigate all aspects of the medium-term rental process. And after that session, knowing that I was with Furnished Finder, I had so many people come up and have questions. And one of the main questions is, well, I have long-term properties, but how do I make the decision to go ahead and switch to medium term or even short term, not knowing if it will be successful in my market. And so one thing that Dave and I do that I think is good advice for those that are, you know, you've analyzed the numbers, you don't see much in your market, you don't know if it's going to be a good market or not. Like, you can go ahead, it's $100, $99 to put your listing on Furnish Finder, and you're not going to get the same result you would if it was perfect with professional photos. But if you really want to know, you could add it before it has any furniture and put furniture coming, contact me if you're interested. And you know what? Give your first renters like a better price than you're going to for the next round, as long as you're still making cash flow on it. And then you'll know that way. And then I think that the real estate market has really perfected the marketing with the virtual staging. It's like you could go ahead and virtually stage your property that you want to turn into a midterm with furniture style that you would be implementing, and then put your availability date like a month out or 2 weeks out or something like that.
Yes.
Give yourself time to go ahead and match it to those photos, you know?
The last one we had, like, exactly. I listed it with absolutely no furniture, and I was like, nobody's going to book this, but let's try it. And it was like booked for the rest of the year within like a week and a half. And I'm like, okay, so now we know that this one is going to be a great midterm rental.
That's
and it
awesome.
Has been a great midterm rental.
Sweet.
And it's wild. And yeah, just putting in a note, like furniture coming, or if you're waiting on the photographer, professional photos coming, like it's showing that you're making the initiative to better the property and that you're a good host.
Yep. And then also, if it's not your first midterm and it's just a new one to you that doesn't have reviews yet, like let your travelers know that, hey, I am a 5-star host. Check out my reviews on my other listings. This is just a new property to us. Mm-hmm. So like, call me if you want to know anything, you know? So awesome. Katie, anything else on this particular topic, or you want to move on?
I don't think so. I'm ready for your mock consultation, girl.
Me too.
I'm ready.
We are not giving the address because I don't want any unwanted competition unless the Flanagans decide that they want to jump.
Wait, now is this a property that you're like, that is, I mean, I know this is mock,
it's more like a, an idea at this point, but it's like an idea I have every other day. So at some point I'm going to take action on it.
Love it. Okay.
So, we have two properties in Georgetown, and, it's walkable to the square. So our two properties
Texas.
Are about a half mile from, Georgetown, Texas. Thank you.
So there's a lot of Georgetowns.
True. Good point. So we have two properties in Georgetown, Texas, that are a half mile from the square, which is a really cool spot for live music and restaurants and green space. So we just really love it. And that's kind of the area of Austin that we like best. And one of the main reasons is we like being outdoors, and at night, it's one of the only towns in our area that has a lighted trail. So we just absolutely love that area. But every time I walk to the square to enjoy that live music or a restaurant, I walk past two multifamilies that are run down and in a great location. And, you know, they don't look terrible, but they just don't look updated. And so in the back of my mind, I think one day I'm going to knock on the door or look up the owner and say, hey, would you like to sell? So Jamie and Brad.
I already have things.
Yeah. So in our intro call, they knew we were going to do this. And so one thing that they wanted to discuss specifically for the depreciation side is it's 4 units or 8 units, because it's 2 4-unit complexes or 8 units altogether. So take it away and tell me what I should do to decide if this is a good property for me.
Well, you just told me, as far like the very first thing when I'm meeting with somebody is it somewhere that you already go? Because if you're now it's going to be a tax write-off to go to your nightly run. Like, that sounds like a great opportunity, and you could check on the property. So I already, like, you've already checked off number one, and Now, so tax, we are very, we go into the taxes. Like most of the people that we're working with are usually have good, decent income, solid income. And the goal is really like, how do we now, you can't work more, you know, can't add to my hourly rate. So how do I now add income or wealth somehow? And so, yeah, the depreciation factor.
So we want to talk about like the acquisition side of it, which in your situation with a midterm rental, it's oftentimes like in our market, and some might have, like we have some midterm rentals that we didn't even anticipate were going to be in that category, and they're kind of like a vacation spot. And so in that instance, the type of financing can change, right? So I can have a second home, I can have multiple second homes, and I can do that even with secondary market money because the guideline states that you just need to occupy it for some portion of the year. There's not a defined period of time.
I don't think that, like, I think it has to be 50 miles, right? Is the at least
correct.
50 miles? Okay. So that would not apply for me in this one because we're within 50 miles.
Perfect. So then that's how we start to troubleshoot the type of financing. And in this case, if it's something that needs some TLC as it sounds. So if we don't have the budget to improve it, because now we know we're forced to have likely a slightly higher down payment, mm-hmm. being that it's going to be in the non-owner occupied space. Mm-hmm. And so can we supplement that? Is the construction going to increase the value? And then can we supplement that with financing? So traditionally, even if I am in the position where I have the cash to put down, mm-hmm. I can still present to the bank or apply to the bank for the construction or the improvement piece of the financing, which in turn is either going to be drawn upon at the time of closing. And for whatever reason, it often seems to be roughly 10% of the acquisition value anyways. So now I end up, it looks like I bought an investment property for like 10% down, which is crazy because people are like, how does that work? And it's not necessarily that I'm getting it for 10% down. I'm just oftentimes the right banking partner can front load that draw for the improvements because we've given them the right documentation to support the future value. And we have a plan in place. So there's some trust and some credibility there.
Okay, so Kelly, financing might be a little bit hairy here, but when you work with someone like our lovely pair, it sounds like you're going to have a lot of options because there are so many different routes that you can take to get to what you need. And you guys have how many properties already, Kelly? 5, 6?
Yes.
So, I mean, clearly, we'll get you there.
You have a resume.
Demonstrated.
You've got a resume. But what I would like to know, and I know a lot of investors and property owners have the question of, is how do I know if this is a good deal? So you pass this fourplex or these two fourplexes. How do you know if it's a good deal? How do you know how much money you're going to have to put into it? How much value might be created? How do you know if it's going to rent? How do you know how much it's going to rent for? Like, can you guys help Kelly know if this is a good investment or a bad investment?
Yeah, so you said it was off market. So you were going to say something.
Well, I am nerdy in the spreadsheet space. So I actually have a calculator, which, generally accepted financial calculations, and they might have more limitations than if you kind of figure out what your needs are. So like I said, we're going to go through a financial analysis and we're going to figure out, are you sustainable with your easily or ordinary income, and is this like a ancillary piece or is this the primary? Do we need this to cash flow while still preserving wealth and growing your ultimate net worth? So that's how we're going to kind of approach it to make sure that this project is specific for the season of life that you're in. And then
are we
looking for a cash on cash return? And what happens with that cash on cash return when we add the multiplier of depreciation to it? What happens if we do cost segregation and get some bonus depreciation out of it? Because that's still income. So now can I use what bonus depreciation you're going to have? Is that going to hinder you from a future transaction in the best term financing, a little unknown. And that's where it's, of course, then private and the deep dive with those clients. And then there's the market research piece of it, where we're how much demand, how much competition, what rate are we getting into? And then there's this collaboration on the real estate side with what kind of deal can we negotiate and how soon can we get it to market even after making said improvements?
Yeah, I would say, like, in even when you approach, like you said, it's off market, so you'd be approaching the owner directly. I'd have some of that research up front so that he's not providing the price to you. It's more like you will ask him what his price is, but you'll already have like, okay, I've already done my research and, you know, similar comparable units at this level. And because of, you know, this is the condition, like, here's what we're going to offer. And obviously coming from a place of where there's, you're going to negotiate. But then also like your due diligence, like I would highly encourage writing in that offer that you get to have a contractor come out and bid the work, and just so that you know what you're getting into, and the bank's going to want that too. And the bank's going to be appreciative, and you can have a couple contractors come out and, you know, make sure you have options, and ultimately you're going to pick the contractor that works for you. And depending on the situation, and that's a whole nother conversation for another day, but just really having like the resume built. So, okay, I know how much it's going to cost me, and I know how much this is how much cash I'm going to have to put in. Furniture, obviously, figuring out furniture for the units, and what is the ideal client for that? Like, we have found, you know, I put sofa beds in all of our units, and it's all independent travel. It's all, like, for the most part, the people who are renting in our 6-unit building are all by themselves. Well, we purchased a 1-bedroom house, and that was, I'm like, well, we have to have a sofa couch, you know, a sofa bed in here, because people are like when you rent a house, there's a reason, like you
have
more people.
Yeah.
And so I found on the apartments, like we didn't. So, you know, just evaluating those expenses and then really knowing, okay, if my furniture budget's $7,500 and my renovation budget's $11,000 and I'm paying this per unit and I'm going to make whatever it is. And I mean, I have found that most of the time, if you can buy an equity, like what you're looking at, where you're going to get a lot of equity pretty quickly after you update it and you fill it with furnished rentals, like what we did with our 6-plex, like it's a no-brainer. And then going back to the tax, the depreciation side of it is just evaluating, do you buy them as 2 4-plexes, because it's, you depreciate that asset over 27 and a half years if it can be considered residential, or if you're buying it as an 8-unit, you're going to depreciate it over, I think it's 39 years. So if you need the depreciation, you might want to look at trying to purchase them as 2 residential. And if you can handle waiting the 39 years and you get better financing terms or whatever it is by buying it as an 8-unit, you don't have, you know, separate closing costs or whatever that might be. But adding all those in and really evaluating both scenarios.
I like what you guys are saying about kind of forming the goal first and then seeing if the numbers fit. First is, I think a lot of times the typical approach is to look at all the numbers and say, okay, that's good or that's bad. But it really does depend on your goal, right? Because if your goal is, like you said, to like have this supplement some income, the numbers need to add up very differently than if this is a, okay, I don't need income, you know, to reach my pocket every month, but I want to use this property in 15 years to help send my kid to college. Right. Like totally different goals. And you know, that even like you said, impacts the way you finance it. So I really like that strategy of starting with the end and making sure that it fits it.
The spreadsheet is going to take into account every factor that it can from a financial perspective. So down payment, monthly payment, interest rate, taxes, insurance, so that, and then I want to project it out over a period of time so I can figure out where's the ideal entry point for my goals, what kind of appreciation should I anticipate, what is the depreciation going to be, and what is my effective tax rate as a consumer, because it doesn't really matter if I can figure out what the depreciation basis is and if I don't know my effective tax rate. So we're going into the details and going to look at the tax return and the financial analysis. And I know somebody's effective tax rate before they do. And it's always in there. You just have to show them where it's at. So at that point, we're going to project that data out, and it's going to include what I'm contributing every month to the bottom line and any rents or vacancy that I anticipate, so that I know when my return is diminished to an extent that I can look for a replacement opportunity to go and divest from that venture and get into the next one.
Awesome. I made a note to come back to something that y'all actually talked about at the very beginning of the mock consultation. And it was the part about, hey, it's a place you already go, so it can be a write-off for taxes. And I think that's what a lot of people don't understand completely until, you know, they hire the real estate CPA that's going to talk them through that. So for those that are listening and maybe don't have that person in on their team yet, how have y'all found it successful to track those driving miles, expenses, when, like, what type of stuff can you write off? What advice can you give landlords out there?
So I'm going to preface this with that I'm not a CPA. He's not a CPA. Like we always have.
This is not tax advice. This is not tax advice. Insert lawyer language.
But like I use a mileage tracking app, and it actually Bluetooths to whatever car I'm in. So I've got multiple cars, so it'll actually tell me I'm in my Jeep, or it'll tell me I'm in, you know, whatever vehicle I'm in, it'll track that to it. And then you can, you know, mark it to whatever property you were visiting. And especially like you're going to be there all the time when your contractors are there renovating it. So you're going to be there a lot more. And that I love the automatic trackers. And then at the end of the year, I download it and I send it to our CPA, and like, it takes me literally 15 seconds. And it's, you know, I have to go through every month and make sure or every day. Some people are much better than me. But I try and do it every month, go through and here's where I was and what address or
so what
whatever
program
client
is that
visit.
For those that need one?
I use Mile IQ. Yep. And I've tried the other ones. I've tried one that was accounting and mile. It didn't, it would track me when I was skiing. Like I'm like, I did not just do a work trip down Winter Park Mountain. Like,
so the, Mile IQ
is what I use. And I think it's $100-$120 bucks a year.
What type of stuff have you found when to write things off and when, you know, it is more personal and you can't?
We record like as much as we can. And then when it's in question, just go to the advisor on that one.
Okay.
Yeah, ask the accountant.
Yeah.
That's what I usually do. I'm like, every time the accountant asks me a question, I'm like, I don't know, whatever you say is right.
Right.
Well, and as a real estate agent, there were recent changes in the tax code that like our meals and entertainment changed to what percentage you could have written off. But like over here on whatever, like, and you might like our business strategy might change altogether because, hey, this was something that benefited in this past. It doesn't anymore. So now we're not going to do that anymore. And we're actually going to take advantage of whatever's happening now. So definitely having like, and people get, you know, you get cheap on things and your CPA is not one of those things when you're doing this, because there's a lot of strategy that could be taken advantage of if done right. And you really need to have that person on your team.
Okay. So going along with all fun things, tax and whatnot, the looming word in the air lately is recession, right? The market is changing, inflation, all these fun things. What advice or thoughts or, you know, what do you guys think investors or property owners should be doing with the cloud of the recession heading our way?
Should be buying property. Because
what about everyone is so, I feel like the higher interest rates have created a lot of fear, a lot of hesitation, a lot of, okay, how long am I going to be locked into this? Or how far down are these property values going to go? Like, what do you say to those property owners and investors, right?
The biggest issue is that people correlate a recession with property values, and that isn't a correlation. It has only become a correlation because many of us that are in the space have only really experienced the one big bad one, and the recession was caused by real estate. And so what happened was overconfidence of the market, and we had 14 million less households at that point in time, and we had like 3 million more homes. So, or I'm sorry, we had Yeah, 14 million. We have 14 million more households today, and we have 3 million less properties available.
It's back to supply and demand, right? Like,
exactly.
101.
And so if you were to calculate destructions and new housing permits, completions, so on and so forth, we're slightly over a million new household creations or new homes created. And we're up to 1.4 to 1.6 new households created annually speaking on a national basis. So we still are not even putting as many homes in the market to meet the demand. And when we're looking at reports, it might say that we have 1.2 million homes available, or, you know, that's the inventory, but that still includes pending contracts. So when that number comes down to 725,000, at least of September, that's 1.9 months of inventory on the market. Like, that is not enough to meet the demand. We have supply chain issues. We have now tightening monetary policy. So nothing is going towards the direction that we're going to have the oversupply. So we can go real simple and say, Warren Buffett, some people know who he is, he has a very simple quote: when others are fearful, be greedy, and when others are greedy, be fearful. Everybody was super greedy when they should have been fearful. Like, we just spent, and hence why we're kind of where we were at. And it also kind of goes back to the generational money and mindset, where all this money was sitting still, so they had to do stuff to get it in motion. It just got in motion too much, too fast, and we waited too long to pay attention to what was going on before we started taking action. And that's why we see high highs and low lows. But short story, it's a buyer's market right now. I mean, why not? Because if you continue to wait, you're just late to the party. People are late to the party in the refinance space. They're late. They keep thinking it's going to go lower, and it's not. Recessions. And I wish I had the chart. I didn't know you were going to ask that question, but you can look at housing value. There's a chart, and it's housing values and recessions, and it's a dark gray space for the recession periods. You go back in history, every time the values have risen. And if anybody wants to scare you about inventory, we're already down from August's inventory in September. So,
well, and with the inventory, right? I mean, everyone who has those good rates, I don't want to sell my house.
They don't
right
want
now.
To go anywhere.
We got a great rate.
Right. Right. Yep.
I'm not giving it right. up. But that is really interesting, because I know my husband and I, we bought our first house in 2011, and it was on short sale. And still, I think that, like you mentioned, the generational kind of mindset with the money, both of our sets of parents were, you know, are you sure? Are you sure? Are you sure? And we're like, yeah, like we need, and it was a great deal. And our only regret is that we sold it when now it would be triple the price yeah. we bought it at. But, you know, it did, you hang in there long enough and things tend to work themselves out. Now, as far as interest rates and people's kind of fear or hesitation towards that topic, you know, what kind of insight or comfort can you give them from the lending space? Because I know that's a big, you know, My thought towards it, and Kelly has heard me say this before, is, you know, we bought an investment property in June, and I kept saying, oh, 6%, 6.5%. But then I'm like, well, I'm not paying it. Someone else is, right? The tenants. So mm-hmm. like, yeah, it sucks, but it's not coming out of my pocket. I mean, inadvertently it is, but it's also not, right?
Right.
I've noticed rents in our area are higher than what the rate, like, even if you would buy a property right now with the higher rate, because of the rents that are what we've seen in like the rents going up, it's actually makes more sense than when some of the rates were at 3-4 and the rents were lower.
Right.
Yeah, so it's like, we would strategically try to buy something because we've actually mapped out, like, based on where the tax obligation is, we want to acquire at this specific rate so that we can continue to offset. But then all of a sudden now you're making more money because the rates are as low as they are. So that's a great time to capitalize on things. But truth be told, like, we were in a less stable economic time to get to those rates. So rates are going up based on positive economic activity. And being the nerdy dude that I like to be, I've gone back 45 years worth of data on interest rates. I'm talking like real time, last week, week before, something like that. So quarter four of 1977 till most recent closed recorded quarter of interest rates. And the average interest rate over that entire period of time, quarter by quarter, not just like year by year, is 7.61% on a national, and rates are kind of the same market to market. That's going to be traditional mortgages on residential property. But then you're also seeing high enough rates of appreciation, depending on your market, to still make it worth a worthwhile investment. So the sky is not falling. You can continue to go back in the data. And I know people argue like housing prices were lower when rates were higher, but we were still seeing double-digit appreciation in the 70s. So
Right. It's
hard to say that like decades worth of data is going to be wrong. I mean, it's not guaranteed. However, I'm going to go off of something justified or supported rather than speculation. And
Right. That's
unsupported.
Awesome. This has been a great topic. Any last things to say about this before we move on to a quick 5 to 10 minute session of our what we call landlord logistics? And I'm going to combine it with furnished finder favorites as well. Anything else before we move forward?
I don't think so.
No.
Covered a lot.
It. You got me excited.
I could talk this like all day.
Okay. You too. Yeah, we'll look forward to like more later in the next episode. All
right. No, I think it's good though. And honestly, I think we should conclude this part with just reminding everyone, like, find someone on your team who obsesses about numbers and stats and trends like Brad does, because those are the people who, like, you want to rely on data and you want to rely on good research and good proof. You don't want to rely on your Uncle Bob's gut feeling or what your mother-in-law might think is happening or what the news stations are telling you. Find someone who lives and breathes it and get them on your team, because that's where you're going to get the actual value and the good insights that are going to make you feel good when you sign on the dotted line and stuff. Because that's not those other, you know, areas of information. That's not their goal. So keep that in mind.
Nope. And yes, if you want more on this type of topic, remember, Brad and Jamie are podcast hosts of Financial Freedom with the Flipping Flanagans. So more on their podcast as well. So we'll transition to landlord logistics and furnished finder favorites. And we had a brief fun conversation on the intro call that I want to make sure gets recorded. And that is, not everybody lives in Texas and has a big old truck that they drive to help move their furniture around to their 5 or 6 properties.
And, oh, yes.
And so, Dave, you know, if it's in the moment, Dave, my hubby Dave will tell me, I'm so tired of moving furniture around. And Brad and Jamie have a tip. So tell us.
So I just go on the U-Haul website. So U-Haul, and they have movers, and you can book them like the night before. It'll tell you who's available. And I've done it in Omaha for years. Like, and we have a staging company, so she has movers, and a lot of times I can take advantage of hers. But if I'm in a bind, we don't feel like moving anymore. We're like, we're over moving furniture. U-Haul. It's like in our market, it's like $160 per guy in a 2-hour minimum. So it's usually $120 to $240 to get movers to your house. And like, done, right? It's like a no-brainer.
You have to box everything up, or they'll box it up for you too.
There's options on there. I've always had, it's usually just like, if I'm doing it for a furnished finder, it's usually already like a couch, and somebody from my team has gone over and packed up all the dishes and the coffee maker, and so it's like 2 or 3 boxes. But there are options to do more, but for the most part we already have it boxed and ready.
Awesome.
Which would then go to like, if you're going to the furniture store and pay a little extra for free delivery, or you pick the free delivery option and assembly, boom. And then, oh, by the way, if you have an apartment that you bought and the appliances are shot, they do offer a lot of times, like they'll take out that one too. Mm-hmm. But
yeah,
to piggyback on it and add that little marketing piece to it, most U-Hauls are local franchise owners. And so where are your people who are staying in the market for 90 days while they pick out a house going to stay? Oh, I'm a local real estate investor with properties for short term.
Awesome.
Awesome.
All right. Give us some tips on how you manage your properties. I know you talked that you have kind of an on staff property manager, but what else do you guys like to use? Do you use any different softwares? Do you use tenant tracking within Furnished Finder? What are some of your best systems to share?
So we use Furnished Finder, we use AppFolio, and then we had actually interviewed property managers back in the day. And after evaluating the cost and what we were still going to be required to do, it completely, it didn't work for us. But we ended up hiring somebody full time, and she had worked for another local place. So she had experience with the software we use, which is AppFolio. And as far as like other tools that we use, AppFolio has like solved a lot of it because it collects our payments. It does our maintenance requests. We've uploaded a short-term rental lease in there. And then obviously, like, as the new landlords, like, Furnished Finder has so many tools that, you know, when you're not, when you don't have, we had 50 properties. And so we needed a system that worked. And actually at the time we had less, but we've grown because of having the systems in place and bringing somebody in full time. But yeah, like a lot of the platform, like Furnished Finder is amazing where it has, I think you have screening, you have templates, lease templates, like your marketing. So finding a platform that's going to work with what you're doing is amazing. And there's so many, like for $99, like isn't that, it's $99. I don't pay them anymore. My property manager does the
$99.
$99 per property per year. It's like, it's so affordable for the amount of stuff that you get and then your incoming leads constantly. So.
Yeah. And to highlight that part, the screenings are free to landlords and passed along. You can check the box that your tenant pays for it, $39.99 per application. And then if you want access to the leases, which is so nice, you just answer questions. That's my favorite thing. It's so easy to use. It's only $29 for the whole year. And then we did add in rent payments as well, which is free to access it and set it up. And travelers, if they want to get travel points and be really secure and pay by credit card or by bank or debit card, then they can do that as well. But yeah, it's all built in. The rent payments send rent reminders so that you don't have to be the bad guy every time too. So
yeah,
there's a lot of good tools on keycheck.com.
You mean people don't pay rent?
I let Dave do that side, and he always is like, oh man, it's that time again. It's like, it's frustrating to keep watching the system. So it's nice when a reminder can be sent.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. I had a tenant pay 10 months rent up front.
Oh,
I've never had anything more glorious happen in my life.
No, we used to have one who paid 6 months at a time.
Oh my gosh. I was like, you can have whatever you want. Yeah. I love you. Thank you.
I personally, as a money guy, I like it when they pay late because it comes with a bonus.
There you go.
I prefer you pay late because you pay more.
Oh my gosh.
Oh, that's awesome. All right. What other landlord logistics questions do we have?
Yep. And I'm done with all my questions. So this can be your last one if you want.
I think we can jump right to it. I would love to hear, you know, I think we've spoke to this a lot, but how Furnished Finder has really helped you guys to achieve your real estate goals, and how you think you'll use it in the future.
The biggest one was, adding to the balance sheet.
It's like, I mean, increase the property value, increase the bottom line. Like, it's the best. We've had more, I don't know, I don't want to even talk about like saying we've had bad experiences in different strategies because I don't want to jinx it, that it's been just very reliable in the sense of the tenant
consistent
quality.
And reliable.
And it truly, if not for it, I could say that the kind of the trouble that comes along with being a person who, an investor who chooses to improve properties, like it was the saving grace to the fact that there was bad communication maybe in the contracting space and improving that property and having more issues than maybe were anticipated. So although we spent more on that improvement side, it was completely justifiable or digestible because of the platform coming into play.
And awesome. we won't comment on other platforms, but when you do like the net, you get into the space of like, do you have a landlord relationship or are you hotel status, you know, depending on your market. And some of the other platforms are trying to get into the 30-day space. They shouldn't be, and they have no place for it. And Furnish Finder solves, you guys are the gap between the long-term and that short-term. And it's amazing. So very, very happy with the platform. And
we love thankful. That. That's
we
great
appreciate
feedback.
It.
Yeah. I lied. I have one more question because I don't want to confuse our audience. We do have the Flipping Flanagans with us. We don't have House Addicts with us, but it's a huge part of this episode considering that's your background. So why don't you give a shout out to your friends so that people know who House Addicts is?
Yes, I'm pretty sure Tara and Cody have been stalking the office because we totally took over their office. But Tara and Cody McCarthy are local to the Denver market. I work with her at eXp Realty. And so we connected through lots of like conferences and real estate conferences. And then when we moved to the area, she was so nice to invite us today to her office and happened. Now we have her beautiful background for us.
So cute.
Thank you, Tara and Cody. How's that?
Well, this has been a great episode. Thank y'all so much for being here. Please do hit like or subscribe if you're enjoying our show. And if you want to comment or ask Brad and Jamie any questions, go to YouTube, the episode on YouTube, or give them a quick reminder of how you'd like listeners to reach out to you.
Yeah, mine is biggest. We are at Instagram and Facebook. You can search Jamie and Brad Flanagan, and we are, again, we have lots of links out there. We almost have too many links. So, but yeah, Jamie Flanagan Realtor on Instagram. Brad's Mr. Flipping Flanagan on Instagram.
Yeah, it seems in this technology world, there's something everywhere. So,
yes,
we have YouTube, we have it all.
Well, thanks, guys. Everybody have a great
day.
Thank
you so much.
Thank you.